Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:01 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is January 17th. Well, I thought I would kick off today with Australia, where the resources sector has popped back above the trend mean. And the extent of its decline was certainly, I think, cushioned by the weakness of the dollar going into the end of the year. Then, of course, we had the flash rally in the Japanese yen at the end of the year, so that contributed to some buying for the Aussie dollar, certainly some closing of short positions. And since then, the Australian dollar has been able to hold most of its advance. Now, it usually would be expected that following such a rebound, you'd get a retest of the low. We haven't seen any evidence of that yet, but that's a factor that we've seen that's pretty common to just about everything that we've seen. A rebound of really quite impressive proportions on a very significant number of asset classes, and it's been persisting now for over 3 weeks. A short-term oversold condition has replaced a short-term overbought condition has replaced a short-term oversold condition. And when we look at, for example, the Australian dollar, perhaps the best thing we can say is that it did rally in November to break the succession of lower rally highs and then encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. Well, if this is a softening up process in terms of that downtrend, then the low that put in early January will hold, and we will see it push above the trend mean. So we're at a rather important juncture for the Australian market. When we look at the ASX 200, it has also been rallying, and it has broken its succession of lower rally highs evident since September. So that's rather positive. But the big arbiter, just like so many other indices, is going to be whether it can sustain a move back above the trend mean. This has been a very impressive rebound. Well, it's been a very impressive rebound on Wall Street as well. When, for example, we look at the S&P 500, it is rapidly unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Well, this is also it looks to me at least to be a much more inconsistent environment than we've seen since 2016. And that's, I think, a more important consideration. When we look at the consistency of trends, well, generally speaking, as a trend progresses, you anticipate that it should get more consistent because the imbalance between supply and demand should widen as more and more people are convinced of the bullish hypothesis. When you get an inconsistency, which is very clearly evident over the last 12 months, following a particularly consistent period, it tells us that supply and demand have come back into balance, and arguably that the balance has shifted in favor of supply. Following such a large inconsistency, then it's going to require more to really ram home that demand is back in a dominant position. So we're going to have to see a higher reaction low. That's something that I've been saying in just about every audio this week, but there's no sign of it just yet. It's not until we see that investors are willing to pay more for something when it pulls back. In other words, that they are afraid that they won't get a better buying opportunity. There's a fear of missing out, so they are willing to buy above the lows of the last reaction. That's when we can clearly have evidence that there is a demand-dominated environment again. So I think that is the most important thing that we have in markets today, is this short-term overbought condition against a background where we had a very deep short-term oversold condition. Then I think the next most important thing is palladium. It's been accelerating higher, and it was up in extremely robust fashion in here today. And it has not been able to hold that advance. Got up above $1,400 very briefly, and now it's at $1,358. But we can see very clearly that it has accelerated to get to this level. Now, we know that acceleration is a trend ending, and if we get downside follow through tomorrow, it's likely to be a peak of at least near-term significance. So I think that's one of the more important charts that we have out at the moment. Palladium is a byproduct of nickel production in Russia. And nickel prices, having been among the firmest in the industrial metals complex until the middle of last year, have experienced a really quite a significant decline, but we are starting to see the first evidence of demand returning to dominance. If nickel prices continue to improve, then that would act as a headwind to palladium because there would be more supply. So if one is monitoring the palladium price, then monitoring nickel is going to be an important part of that. Of course, palladium has been such a rollicking outperformer that it has overshadowed the rather lackluster performance of the other precious metals over the last 6 months. But nonetheless, gold continues to hold around this $1,300 area, although not quite through it yet. And just by going sideways, it's unwinding its short-term overbought condition. So that is, I think, rather encouraging. The more important point, though, of course, is that it has to sustain the move above $1,250. If it can do that, then I think the outlook for it to go back up and test the $1,400 area will remain intact. One point that's, I think, rather interesting is that a number of the gold miners are not investing in new supply. They're much more interested in buying their competitors. And that's both a testament to the fact that it's extraordinarily expensive to go out and find new gold resources of sufficiently high grades to make the effort worthwhile, but also it tells us where we are in terms of the mining funding cycle, that generally speaking, you need prices to be going up for a while before banks are willing to write checks for miners. And we're just not far enough away from the debacle of so many miners going under. The fact that you're still seeing commodity trading desks being closed by banks, most recently with BNP Paribas this week, that tells us that interest in mining and funding mining operations is deteriorating. So there just simply isn't the money around to go out and build and to explore for new resources. So the options left to the major companies are to merge. That's perhaps not great for shareholders, but what it does, I think, point to is that eventually, if gold prices do break on the upside, then the miners will be really quite highly leveraged to the gold price. Because if they're not investing in new mines, then the likelihood is that they'll be able to return any additional free cash flow to shareholders. That was one of the important points in the beginning of the last big move in gold. Was back in the early 2000s, the gold miners did very well. Then they started plowing all their cash back into development projects, and that turned them from being outperformers relative to the gold price to being spotty performers. And then they were much more highly leveraged to declining prices when the gold price actually did start coming down. So I think we are at an interesting juncture here for some of the gold miners. Now, the NYSE ARCA Gold Bugs Index is right in the region of the trend mean, and it was in negative territory in here today. So it really is going to have to sustain a move back above the trend mean to break that sequence of lower rally highs. When we look at the VanEck Vectors Gold Miners ETF, well, it is above the trend mean. It didn't pull back by nearly as much in the middle of last year. And as long as it's holding that sequence of higher reaction lows, then we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, when we look at what's going on in terms of Brexit, there are a very substantial number of arguments, and it really does come down to a question of principle. But I think what is becoming increasingly apparent is that there is a substantial number of the political establishment are not exactly people of principle. What we can certainly see is that the pound has got base formation characteristics relative to the euro, and that has been going on now since the Brexit result was announced in 2016. If we look at the internal dynamics of the range, the upward dynamics really do stand out relative to the downward dynamics. Well, what that suggests is that people want to buy it. They want to own pounds relative to the euro. And every time it looks increasingly likely that the UK will remain closer to the euro, the pound advances. So that is the market voting both for what it thinks would be in the market's interest and then also what they think is the most likely scenario. Well, that does appear to be what is in the offing, with the Labour Party increasingly wanting an election but willing to settle for an additional referendum, with Theresa May on the one hand saying that a no deal Brexit is still on the table, and yet Philip Hammond reportedly telling business leaders that it was off the table. That tells us that there is a lot of two-faced negotiation going on. There's a lot of brinksmanship going on, but that the general trend is towards greater unity with the EU. And if they do, in fact, go for a Norway-type scenario, that is essentially membership of the EU in all but name. Well, that is perhaps, I think, one of the more likely scenarios if we don't, in fact, get a referendum. And I certainly think that the referendum at this stage is probably a 50-50 bet. Now, when we look at, for example, Lloyds Banking Group, it's a wholly UK bank, and it had pulled back to test the lows from immediately after the Brexit vote, and it is also unwinding its short-term oversold condition. If we look at, for example, some of the housing companies, well, they have also been unwinding their short-term oversold conditions and are right in the region of their respective trend means. Well, you can see that there is incredible commonality right across countries and asset classes in terms of this reversion back to the mean and a very impressive rebound over the last 3 weeks. And you'll have heard me say on more than one occasion that we need to see a higher reaction low. Well, what could that potentially look like? If, for example, we look at Salesforce, then we have a higher reaction low. There is also now a higher high. So this is very clear outperformance, that the rebound subsequent to the decline in November took it to break the sequence of lower rally highs. Then it pulled back and found support above the November low in December, and now we have another higher high. So this is very clear evidence of support building. It gives us very logical touchstones in terms of what a recovery scenario might look like, because $120 is now a psychological Rubicon. That's where the most recent of the higher reaction lows is. Now, this is also a share that has replaced a short-term oversold condition with a short-term overbought condition, so couldn't be at all surprised if we do get some additional consolidation. But that has to be, I think, contrasted with, for example, what we see with Amazon. So Amazon also pulled back violently, but it has also had a sequence of lower rally highs. It's got a sequence of lower lows, and it is now rallying, albeit impressively rallying, back up to test that sequence of lower highs. So it, at a minimum, needs to put in a higher reaction low to really demonstrate we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Arguably, if in the absolute best case scenario would be that it rallies above $1,800, has a very mild consolidation, and then improves upon that performance, but that's a big ask. So when we think about where we are in terms of these markets, we've certainly got a big advance, and that there is certainly a rush back into some of these risk assets. Well, that is true for no share more than Netflix, where we've seen a very impressive rebound since the beginning of this year. And on that weekly chart, you can see clearly that we're coming back towards the first area of potential resistance. So here again, we still have the sequence of lower lows and lower highs. And it's not until that sequence is broken that we could really conclude we're back in a demand-dominated environment, or at least we would need to see a higher reaction low. I feel like I'm a broken record on that point, but I think it really does bear highlighting. well, when we now look at what's going on in the emerging markets, then India was in positive territory again today, and it was up by 14. And as long as it is continuing to hold above that 10,000 level, I think we're still in a demand-dominated environment. The dollar has been reasonably firm over recent days, but the rupee was in positive territory, albeit only just in here today. And I do think that it's unlikely we're going to see a meaningful move below 75 for the rupee. There are a substantial number of countries that have got elections coming up, and India is one of them, and Indonesia is another, and the rupiah was a little bit softer in here today. The Jakarta Composite has been among the better performers internationally, and it continues to extend its advance away from the trend mean. The Brazilian market has pretty much been surging higher following the election result, and it was up another almost 1,000 points in here today as it's pulling away from this 90,000 level. Well, that's clearly the market rewarding a move to a reform-minded administration. I think we can probably withhold judgment on just how successful that reform agenda is likely to be, but the market is certainly giving it the benefit of the doubt in the short term, and the Brazilian real has been really quite steady, holding right in the region of the trend mean over the course of the last week. Now, when we look at China, I think this is a market where people are holding their breath, because we do have the potential for a fiscal stimulus, and that could be in the order of about $300 billion. But the problem with fiscal stimuluses is that they do create excesses, and then they have to be paid for. So the A-share market was in negative territory in here today. The much bigger point, of course, is that the trade war is ongoing. And I'm posting a report today from the Department of Defense's Intelligence Agency, and they're highlighting the fact that China is modernizing its military, and it has been doing so for years, that they've attained impressive technological capabilities. Then, of course, there's the point that they're building a daisy chain of military bases from the Persian Gulf to China, and they're building aircraft carriers. Well, you don't do that unless you want to project power internationally, and certainly China will want to protect its interests. Then, of course, you have the fact that oil prices have been largely range-bound over the course of the last decade. Part of the reason for that is because the USA has turned from being a net exporter, the biggest exporter, to being a net, excuse me, importer, to being the big a net exporter. And when we think about that, it's obviously a boon for the US economy. But of course, China is nowhere close to energy independence. That's why they are so intent on building nuclear reactors. It's why they are so intent on electric cars and battery technology and battery production. And it's also why the USA is not as focused on the global security apparatus as it used to be, and why the USA is not as clear a champion of nuclear or indeed the battery technology, because the simple reason is it doesn't have to be, whereas China absolutely has to be. It's not simply just a choice, it's a geopolitical imperative. So that gives us a clue as to where the national priorities are likely to arise. It also virtually ensures that China is going to be more militarily assertive internationally, and that is potentially a source of significant potential stress out there in the world. So we may certainly get some waning of the kinds of pressures that are weighing on the trade war, but it is very unlikely that the trade war is simply going to disappear. Now, when we look at some of the agricultural commodities, soybeans is relatively steady and coming back up to test the region of the trend mean. White sugar, which has been rallying rather impressively over the last few days, is also right in the region of the trend mean. Then when we start to think about some of the other commodities that are out there in the global horizon, well, cotton prices have been trending down for the last 6 months, and they are now in the region of the lows from last year. So if we see an additional rally from here, it could potentially break the sequence of lower rally highs evident over the last 6 months. And natural gas prices were down yesterday, and they weren't able to hold their rally intraday. They weren't able to hold their rally intraday today either. So there's certainly some indecision going on right now. But certainly prices came down very sharply, and they have so far been able to hold this move up and away from the $3 area. The fact is that there isn't enough natural gas in storage, but there's plenty of natural gas being produced. And if we do get colder weather, then natural gas prices are likely to rally. If we get warmer weather, they're likely to come back down. We're going to have a very volatile environment this winter, I suspect, because of that low supply situation in terms of storage for winter. Then the US dollar remains really quite firm. The dollar index is perhaps the most watched index for the dollar, and it is continuing to firm from the region of the trend mean. When we look at, for example, the real broad dollar index, so this is a trade-weighted index, and in real terms for the US dollar, then it's also rallying here, and it is back at the region for the 2016 highs. Well, what this I think really very clearly suggests is that the argument that the dollar is weakening is really only against a select number of emerging market currencies. That when you start to think about the fact that Europe remains under rather significant economic pressure, that the potential is that the French and the Italians are both going to break the fiscal rules, that the German economy is under some stress. Now, there has been some parsing of the disappointing sales figures for cars in the EU, and on a year-over-year basis, they're not looking particularly good because a lot of purchases were front-loaded to try and get in ahead of the new European emissions laws. So you had a spike in purchases and then a decline. But when you look at it on a simple week-to-week basis, then the car sales are in fact in positive territory. But the growth rate has moderated substantially, and that's a pretty similar story for China. The growth rate for new purchases has contracted significantly, whereas electric vehicle demand has been trending higher and continues to trend higher. But of course, that is because of very clear state support for the sector. Obviously, battery technology is a major priority for China. So I think we are still in a corrective phase. We've certainly had a rebound, and that is really very encouraging. Now the big question, and it is an awfully big question, is whether we're going to get a higher reaction low. The other point, of course, is that the US Treasury market had experienced a very significant rally, and it is now also unwinding its overbought condition, and it hasn't quite done it yet. Well, if the inverse correlation between the bond yield and the equity price, or the clear correlation between the rebound in the inverse correlation between the price of bonds and the equity market, is going to hold, then we may not see a meaningful decline in the equity market until bond futures come back and test their trend mean. That's a potentially bullish potential outcome for the stock market, because treasury prices have been reasonably steady. And despite the fact that they were in negative territory in here today, it does look like that the pace of the decline has been rather moderate compared with the potential, considering how wide the overextension is. That doesn't mean it can't pick up. But the big question for the bond markets is whether that region of the trend mean is in fact going to offer support. We've had a very meaningful contraction in terms of the Treasury prices. When we look at the yield, then we get it the other way around, and we've had a significant drawdown, and now the oversold condition relative to the trend mean is being unwound. The region of 2.5%, which offered resistance in 2015 and 16, has offered support on this occasion. So what we may be in for is a more rangy environment between 2.5% and 3.25%, as the potential for this market to simply go sideways as the competing arguments between investors pricing in the potential for rate cuts a year out from now is weighed against the potential, or I guess what that would also suggest is that there's going to be a recession next year, or whether we're going to have a continued economic revival, and whether the worst case scenario has already been priced in. So there's certainly a big argument going on out there in the market right now, and certainly, when we think about the supply situation, the logical conclusion is that we should see higher yields, that there is a substantial quantity of bonds that need to be refinanced. That is equally true in the investment grade side. It's not quite as large in the high yield sector, and high yield spreads are contracting. When we look at the US high yield market, it failed to sustain that move above 5%, and it is coming back now to unwind that overbought condition relative to the trend mean. If we look at, for example, one of those big junk bond ETFs, they have unwound their short-term oversold conditions relative to the trend mean. So again, this is another example where it would be, I think, rather rash to conclude that the market is going to continue rallying as it has been doing for the last 3 weeks. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.